Hey, what's up, everybody? Welcome to Game Quest, the Game Day podcast here at VolQuest.com. I'm Eric Kane alongside Grant Ramey, and it is a big one. It is Tennessee at Georgia, biggest game of the season for both these teams, and so many different things on the line when you look at college football playoff implications for Tennessee. Currently number one in the SEC standings. You win this game, you got a very real chance to go play in Atlanta. So many different things happening. We're going to get to all those things over the course of the next 30 to 40 minutes here on Game Quest, presented by our great friends over at Premier Garage of Knoxville, East Tennessee's number one provider for custom garage flooring, cabinetry, and storage solutions. You can be the best Tennessee fan this football season by ordering the Smoky Gray Hybrid Polymer Floor today. That is at PremierGarageKnoxville.com/falls. PremierGarageKnoxville.com/falls. That is Premier Garage of Knoxville, proud sponsor of Game Quest. All right, man, let's just kind of set the scene a little bit, Grant. We've been at it all week. Huge game. And I think Tennessee is a different football team. There's a lot of parallels from 2022 to now. I mean, I know both teams were undefeated that year, and that's not the case this year. But, you know, everything is right in front of for both of these teams. It's on the road. It's in Athens. It's going to be such a hostile environment. But these are those type of football games you come to Tennessee, you know, to coach in or to play in, as Josh Heupel would say. This is a big one, man, and I think it's going to be a pretty good one.
It's if you're trying to take that next step, I guess, as a program, these are the games that you need to try to win, find a way to win some of these games. Obviously, you're not going to be perfect on the road. It's really tough to win on the road in this league, as we saw with Georgia last week at Ole Miss. But, you know, Josh Heupel's got Tennessee. He had them at 8-0 in 2022. He's got them at 8-1 here 2 years later. In the thick of the college football playoff hunt. If you want to stay in it, if you want to kind of control your own destiny, I guess, you got to find a way to kind of win these games. And it feels a lot different than 2022 because of what we've seen from Tennessee's defense and how dominant they've been. I mean, they haven't allowed an opposing offense to score 20 points in, I think, 10 games now. Does that go back to Vanderbilt last November, something like that? So, I mean, it feels different. Obviously, there's a ton of questions about Nico, and you know, the offense is obviously looking a lot different than it did 2 years ago. But it feels like the way Tennessee has ran the football, the way Tennessee has played defense, that you should be able to, I don't know, compete, stay in this game a little bit more than you did a couple of years ago. But, I mean, it's a huge stage. It's a really good opponent, even though Georgia has kind of – I feel like every week we're talking about it's hard to figure out these teams. Well, Georgia, the same one that went to Austin and dominated Texas, went to Ole Miss and went up 7-0 and got dominated for the rest of the, whatever, 55 minutes in that football game. So – you got to go to Athens and find a way to compete and win a football game and keep those college football playoff. It's not an elimination game. I want to go ahead and get that out of the way. In my opinion, it's not. I don't think it is. I think Tennessee will still have plenty to play for, and chaos could happen around them, and Tennessee could still be in it even if they lose at Georgia. But you want to take the next step as a program, and these are the games where you do it.
A couple of things I want to react to what you just said. Number one, transit of property, right? This is how it works. So, you know, Kentucky gave Georgia all it could. Georgia squeaked out a win earlier in the year. Kentucky beat down Ole Miss earlier in the year. So, like, I mean, it's, you know, I love playing those games when you can look. I mean, it just goes to show you each team is different each and every single week. It's a whole new season. Number two, so it's a made-for-TV broadcast. And right. You know, the other night they sandwiched it in between the doubleheader basketball. It's like, you got to have a rankings out there, but you know, for what they want to do, they couldn't stretch it out to an hour and talk in circles and have new narratives and everything. So it was almost not even worth it. But it feels like they've got to come up with different storylines each week. So for the rankings that just came out, I will disagree with you. Now, it could change next week, okay? But I agree with you in terms of it's chaos, college football, that right. type of stuff. But what the committee told us on Tuesday, Tennessee, you lose, you're probably done. That's how I took it, right? Because you had Indiana that is undefeated, but it leapfrogged Tennessee. BYU leapfrogged a couple spots up into the rankings. And neither one of those teams just came off huge, huge, huge wins, regardless right. of what the committee says. So what the committee told me, at least on Tuesday, in my interpretation, is that Tennessee, you lose, you're done. Now, will that narrative change next week because Tennessee's lost to Georgia and all that type of stuff? I don't know. But I thought for the most part, Grant, those rankings on Tuesday night were kind of like, okay, well, BYU, we slotted you last week. Indiana, we slotted you last week. Let's make up for that. And even though two teams in front of Tennessee lost, Tennessee stays put there at number seven.
Well, I know BYU is a team that jumped Tennessee, but BYU, in my opinion, doesn't really matter because the Big 12 is going to get in. probably one team. I would be stunned if BYU went undefeated and lost to Colorado in the title game, Big 12, maybe they get in two teams. I think the Big 12 is going to be a one-bid league. The teams that Tennessee are worried about are the Indianas, the Alabamas, Ole Miss, these other teams in the ACC and Big 10 that are at-large teams that are going to be in that 10-2 conversation or whatever their records are. You need as many as those teams to fall off and to lose. And it's going to feel like an elimination game based on what we saw on Tuesday, Tennessee-Georgia. But I don't think it's going to end up being an elimination game because that transitive property that you're talking about a few minutes ago, it is so hard to predict from one week to the next who's going to show up, who's not going to show up, and how it's going to play out. You could have who knows what kind of upsets in the Big Ten and in the SEC over the next 3 weeks that could completely change what this Georgia-Tennessee game means. And that could be for the better. It could be for the worse. It could be an elimination game based on how stuff plays out. But I think there's still going to be life, hope, whatever, if Tennessee goes down there and is competitive and still doesn't win that football game.
Yeah, I mean, that's fair. That's fair. Again, you know, what the committee told us on Tuesday can be completely different. I continue to say that because we've seen it even with the four-team playoff. What they value changes every single week. So what they ultimately value, I don't know if we're going to know that until the end of November. You know?
Right.
So you know, we'll see what happens. In that same sense, this is the Volunteers podcast, not a Georgia podcast, but in that same sense, you know, Georgia loses. You would think, oh, they're out. Three losses, but they've got the number one strength of schedule. They've got wins. They got, you know, win over Texas and, you know, Clemson's down. I get that. But, you know, prior to losing 2 weeks ago, they were going to be in the 12 team the first week. They got a couple wins is what I'm trying to say. So, you know, maybe they value Georgia kind of like they value Alabama right now. I don't know. We'll have to see. But nonetheless, it's a huge game for both programs for sure. I want to start with, and we'll talk Nico and we'll talk the injury. I mean, you guys know this, you know the drill. We record, you know, before, you know, Friday. And so this is a very fluid situation and there's been some injury reports out there and there's an updated injury report Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and then 90 minutes before kickoff. So this is very fluid. We're going to talk as if Nico plays and then we're going to talk as if Nico doesn't play. But regardless of who's taking snaps at center, you know, under center for Tennessee, I hate saying under center for Tennessee because they're never under center. Because
they've never been under center.
Yeah, except in jumbo package. The crowd's a real deal, and I'm trying not to make too much of a deal about it, but, I mean, it is what it is. Tennessee has struggled in these big-time games under Josh Heupel. You've lost on the road at night to Florida twice. You lost at night one time to Alabama. You lost in the afternoon to Alabama. You lost Georgia was in the afternoon, but you lost to Missouri last year. You lost to South Carolina in 2020. You lost to Arkansas this year. So these night games on the road have given Tennessee some pause and some struggle, and it's going to be an electric atmosphere down there. Georgia has – this will be the Georgia's first night game at home. I believe – gosh, don't quote me, but, man, I'll do it right now. 1, 2, 3. This will be the fourth game at home for Georgia this year. That's crazy. I mean, you're in November right now. They haven't been home in a month. So that place is going to be absolutely wild. Backs against the wall. And you know Kirby. Kirby's got that team thinking that everybody's got him out. And the College Football Playoff Committee on Tuesday added insult to injury in that regard. It is going to be a huge environment. So how does Tennessee, Nico, Gaston, Cooper Mays, Tennessee's offense, how do you handle all that? Because in 2022... I believe you had 5 procedural penalties, and obviously you can't have that.
No, and it feels like they've been in second and long forever in this offense for whatever reason. It feels like, I don't know, the rhythm, just the play calling, it feels like they've kind of struggled to stay in front of the chains. I think you have to do that in this kind of atmosphere. The procedural penalties can happen. We saw that with Alabama at Tennessee a few weeks ago, how many times they put themselves behind the sticks because they were jumping off sides and they didn't handle the noise well. And then a couple weeks later, they go to LSU, Death Valley on a Saturday night, and they beat, you know, LSU 42-6 or whatever, the 42-13, whatever the final score of that game was. So you better handle the noise. You better run the football. You better be able to settle in somewhat quickly and kind of, I don't know, get some first down, string a drive out a little bit. What you can't have is quick three and outs and giving up points and feeding that home crowd and keeping that home crowd in it. You gotta do your part to kind of take the noise out of there as much as you can in terms of staying on the field, having some success, finding ways to move the football, and don't shoot yourself in the foot with those procedural penalties.
We're going to take a short break here in a moment, but I do want to ask you before we do that, Tennessee has moved the football and scored the football over Josh Heupel's tenure here against everybody except Georgia. Even when Tennessee was losing to Alabama in 21, before they beat him in 22 and, of course, lost in 23, Tennessee put points up against Alabama, ran the football against Alabama. Tennessee has not done that against Georgia outside of one explosive run last year, with Jalen Wright. So with Tennessee's offensive line that is playing much better, with Tennessee's running back that is an All-American, can Tennessee avoid being one-dimensional, and can Tennessee consistently run the football on the road at Georgia on Saturday?
I don't know if they can, but they're going to have to if they want to win a football game, if they want to stay in it, into the second half, third and fourth quarter. And Georgia's human. We've seen that. Georgia, the way they looked at Ole Miss, what Ole Miss did to them, the offensive line, and so they have weaknesses. But can Tennessee run it? I think they've ran it against everybody else. We just haven't seen them do it against Georgia. Now they're going to have to find a way to do that. If that's 12 personnel, if that's whatever it is, you're going to have to find a way. If you're going to have to get creative to do that. Dylan Sampson's been the guy. Everybody's talking about quarterback all week because of Nico's injury and everything and trying to figure out if he's going to play or not. But at the same time, Tennessee hasn't been relying on the quarterback to win the football game. They've relied on a defense, and they've relied on running the football. So they're going to have to be very, very elite on the defensive side, regardless who's at quarterback. And they're going to have to run the football, regardless of who's at quarterback, because that's just what they do. That's the DNA of this team this season. That's what they've relied on. And they're going to have to continue to do that. We just haven't seen them do it against Georgia to this point in terms of running the football. They can do it. They better find a way to do it. They're going to have to.
Yeah, it's a nice segue into what we'll hit on when we come back. And I'll say this from the top, and I don't know if you'll agree with me, but I'll ask you here in a moment. It's hard to feel good about Tennessee without Nico. I'm going to say that. It's really hard to feel good about Tennessee, to pick Tennessee, if Nico doesn't play in this game. Having said that, you're exactly right. Tennessee has won games with its running ability. Tennessee has won games with its defense. And I think both of those are going to play. I think both of those are going to travel, especially the defense. I truly do. And so if it is Nico, or if it's Gaston or whoever, I think this is going to be a close football game. And I think this is going to be a good one. I do. So we'll talk quarterback. We'll break down scenarios if Nico plays, if Gaston doesn't play. By the time you listen to this, maybe the news is out there. But we just want to cover our bases here at the time of this recording. But I do want to tell you about our friends over at Premier Garage in Knoxville. Proud presenting sponsor of this show, Garage Guys or Gals Who Bleed Orange. Do you use your garage as some sort of man cave? Watching football throughout the fall, or maybe even trying to get a quick escape from the family. If you're like me, I like to start my Saturdays out there in the garage watching college game day. Even the start of that new 12:45 kickoff on the SEC Network. It's my place. It's your place. A place to kick back a few cold ones, escape from it all. So here's a question for you. What better compliment to this garage, this sanctuary of sorts, than Premier Garage of Knoxville's custom smoky gray hybrid polymer floor? Again, Premier Garage of Knoxville's custom smoky gray hybrid polymer floor. I'm going to show you right now. If you go to the website, which is premiergarageknoxville.com/vols, you will see what I'm talking about right here. If you're watching on YouTube, I'm going to show you. Okay, you can see the speckled, garage floor in the background here. Here's a video. Look at that right there. Just gorgeous, okay? And this can be your garage. You can be the best Tennessee fan this football season, this basketball season, with this garage flooring. It's beautiful. I mean, Tennessee donned the smoky grays in week one, looked really, really good doing it, and you can do that with your garage. You come up here to premiergarageknoxville.com/vols. You can sign up for a free in-home consultation, okay, just filling out stuff right here. Plus, you can see everything else they have going on right over here, cabinetries, cabinets, storage, garage, whatever they got going on over here. And, of course, here's the phone number, 865-947-8686. But this is the place you want to be, this landing page, premiergarageknoxville.com/falls, and you can check out all that I'm talking about with that spec floor. And they can schedule that free in-home consultation via that website. It's 15 plus years of business, locally owned and operated. Thousands of satisfied customers. That is Premier Garage Knoxville. And check it all out today. Can't thank them enough for being a part of the show, and love doing business with them. They are great people. Again, that is premiergarageknoxville.com. Okay, so we want to thank them. Also want to thank our friends over at Prize Picks. Prize Picks is a whole lot of fun. Grant and I played a lot last year. We're playing some this year. And you can put some coin in your pockets this football season by just filling out a player grid. So how does this work? It's a player grid, at least two, no more than six, and they're going to give a stat projection over there, okay? And all you're going to do, you're going to go through and pick more than or less than. And if you play $5, you're going to get $50 instantly. Play $5, get $50 instantly by putting in that promo code VQ. Promo code VQ, $5, play it, get $50 instantly by putting in that promo code VQ right now. It's a whole lot of fun. You can play college football, NFL. There's other sports out there, NBA, college basketball season has started as well. You got a player grid. You can earn 10 times of your money back at prizepicks.com/VQ today. So play $5, get 50 instantly, promo code $5 or promo code VQ when you play $5 in lineups. All that and more over our friends at prizepicks.com. It is Tennessee. It is Georgia. Between the Hedges, Saturday night, 7:30 Eastern time. Right, Grant? 7:30.
That's correct. 7:30 Eastern time.
It's on ABC. It's the big one. It's the game everybody's talking about. We kind of broke down what it could mean for college football playoff implications. Feels like it's a must-win for Georgia. Considering what the committee told me on Tuesday night, feels like a must-win for Tennessee. But to Grant's point, that can change week by week, and I understand and agree with that. A big-time football game. But the theme of the week, the story of the week, I was trying to say story and theme at the same time, and it came out like that. The theme of the week for Tennessee football has been the injury, specifically to quarterback Nico Iamaleava, Austin Price, and Brent Hubbs. They've been dropping notes on the GQ all week, kind of giving you a day-by-day synopsis of kind of what Nico did, and you know, that's why they're the best insiders in the business. Tuesday night, Grant, you had one national media member say that he was out. You had another national media member say that he was playing. You had another national media member that said he practiced, but it's still undetermined. Point of the matter is national media members don't have to answer anybody, and they just throw stuff at the wall, and then they hit, right? I mean, that's just kind of my opinion on that. So with what Nico's dealing with, it truly is a day-by-day thing. You know, if he plays, that's great for Tennessee. Let's hit it from the angle right now as if he doesn't. Grant, if Nico, and again, by the time you listen to this podcast, maybe the news is broke that he's in or out. But Grant, if Nico doesn't play, and it is Gaston Moore, does Tennessee have a decent chance of winning this football game still?
I was having this exact conversation with Jake Rowe the other night. Dogs HQ, shout out. Jake Rowe, one of the best in the business covering Georgia. I think you could have much worse backup quarterback situations. I guess I should say that. If you were going to Georgia and you didn't think you had Nico and you were riding with Jake Merklinger, that's probably disaster because he's a freshman. He's going to Sanford Stadium, 7:30, huge football game, really tough opponent, all that stuff. Gaston, he's not that guy you saw against Alabama that rolled right and threw it off his back foot down the football field into double coverage and it was picked off. I think he's much more of what you saw in the second half against Mississippi State, a guy that has a pretty good arm for a former walk-on, a guy that's been with Josh Heupel since UCF, feels like a decade now.
Yeah.
A guy that knows how to kind of keep the train on the tracks. And like we talked about in the first half of this thing, Tennessee, it's not like Nico's throwing for 450 and four touchdowns every single week. Or like 2022, if you don't have Hendon Hooker, it's going to be a disaster because that's the guy that's putting up insane numbers, and the offense is what you're riding every single week. Like we talked about with this team, they're so good defensively, and they're so good running the football that's what they've relied on. And for good reason, because they're not giving up more than 20 points a game so far. And because Dylan Sampson's ran for 20 touchdowns and 100 and whatever it is, 20 something yards per game at this point. So I think you could be, especially in the transfer portal era, in a much worse situation than having a fifth year, whatever year it is for Gaston Moore, veteran guy as your backup, and a guy that I don't think he's got that bad of an arm. I think he can get the ball where it needs to go. It's just going to be how he would handle the situation, being on the road, stuff like that. If you can avoid disaster, I think Tennessee could be in a much worse situation with their backup quarterback if you didn't have Gaston Moore.
Yeah, I agree with a lot of that. I think Gaston Moore is not your typical backup walk-on quarterback. Again, like you pointed out, he's been with Josh Heupel. I mean, outside of Josh Heupel, Joey Halsley, Alex Golish, I'll put in there. I'll put in Glenn Ellerbe as well. I mean, Gaston Moore knows this offense better than about anybody. So
I agree.
And you saw that. I mean, Tennessee had a 13-point lead. He grew that lead. Mississippi State's awful. I get all that. But he came in, ran the offense. They took some shots. And, yeah, he's got a cannon. He's got a really good arm. And I think Tennessee's is good with the backup. Now, is it ideal to go on the road, especially a place like Georgia, huge game, to have your backup? If that's the case, no, it's not ideal. But I, again, this is why I'm picking this game to be close, regardless of who's at quarterback for Tennessee, because I think Tennessee will run. I think this year's offensive line, along with Dylan Sampson, can get that done. And I think Tennessee's defense is going to show up. We're going to talk about Georgia's offense and how Georgia overall is still a solid football team. Anybody that's saying they're bad is just not paying attention, but they're not dominant. And that's the difference in Georgia this year compared to the Georgia teams that Tennessee's played in recent memory. This is not a dominant Georgia football team. This is a good, solid football team, but it's not dominant. So I think regardless of who's playing quarterback for Tennessee, I think Tennessee has the opportunity to be in this one and make it close. Here's where I would have pause. Gaston, out of the pocket, off platform, extending plays, throwing on the run. I would assume that's not a strong suit of his game. I can't say for certain because we've never seen Gaston play a whole lot of football, but I would assume that is not a strong suit of his game. That is Nico's strong suit.
Right.
And Georgia's defense is going to get after Nico. I mean, that's just how it's going to go. So Nico can make plays on the run. We've seen him make some incredible throws off platform, you know, on the rollout or sprint out or whatever. And I think it kind of comes down to this. Does Gaston have enough to make some plays to go win you the football game? It's not like Nico's made a living doing that, but Nico can do that. You know what I'm saying? And I don't know if Gaston can. So that's kind of where I come down to it, because I think this game will be close. Again, I think defense will come. I think Tennessee will run the game. I think the defense will give the offense opportunities. But if you need a play, we know Nico's capable of making that play. And so I think that's where Tennessee, you know, would really, really, really miss Nico when it came down to it. You know, of course, they're going to make him miss him in other regards, too. I mean, he can run, right, pick up first down, stuff like that. But I think that's the big thing right there when you're looking at maybe Gaston instead of Nico.
And you can't discount the running either. I don't think if Nico plays, there's going to be a ton of designed runs, but there's 5 or 6 yards that he picks up here or there, or gets out of the pocket and runs it, puts his head down. I mean, we saw that, 27-yarder against Alabama, I think it was, in the second half. What a big play that was, how that kind of changed the game. So it's not necessarily the legs are the biggest difference in the game for the quarterback, but it's a pretty big deal when you're trying to string along drives and keep drives alive and get that 5 or 6 yards and set up a better third down, 3rd and 2 instead of 3rd and 8, stuff like that. And I don't know if Gaston would. I think if Gaston is the quarterback, you better have a very elite offensive line game and clean pockets and stuff like that to allow him to operate, because of what you're talking about, getting out of the pocket. We don't really know how he compares to Nico there.
You look at Georgia, and that's why I think this is going to be a close game regardless, because, you know, this offense, I mean, Carson Beck, when protected, I still think he's a good quarterback. But I'll tell you what, man, I mean, he was a potential first-round draft pick last year, elected to come back. Everybody had him number one overall, number one quarterback, you know, coming into the season. Boy, his stock has sunk a little bit. I mean, he's still going to be drafted, and we can get into that, talk about draft later on in the offseason, but he is not a first-round quarterback right now. He has turned the football over a ton. Now, there's been offensive line issues in front of him. He has no run game. He has no Brock Bowers. He's missing some weapons. But he himself has just not got it this year. You talk to anybody over on the Georgia sites or Georgia fans, frustrated with him. And, you know, people will hate on Mike Bobo all they want. Tennessee fans don't like Joey Halsey half the time. That's just kind of part of it. But I think Tennessee's defensive line can take advantage of those injuries and inconsistent play up front for Georgia and get after Carson Beck and force him to do what he's done this year, do what he's done 12 times this year. He's got 14 turnovers on the season in the last 6 games. He has 12 interceptions. Do what he does and hand the football over to the defense. Create extra opportunities, create short fields, and then Tennessee's offense, whoever's a quarterback, has got to go capitalize on that. So I think Tennessee's defense, I'm not going to call it a field day because it's not going to be that easy, but I think Tennessee's defense will have plenty of opportunities to do just that because Carson Beck is playing very inconsistent football. And again, he doesn't have a run game to kind of help him out. I mean, arguably the biggest get out of the transfer portal this offseason was Trevor Etienne going from Florida to Georgia, and that's not panned out. They've had some injuries at running back. I get all that. But they're 15th in the league in rushing this year. I think Tennessee's defense – Brent mentioned this on the board the other day, has been so focused on not giving up the big play against some well below average teams, Kentucky, Mississippi State, that maybe they gave a little, maybe they played a little lighter boxes, maybe they gave, and trust me, I mean, the eyes were bad, the angles were bad, the fits were bad at times. I mean, Tennessee's defensive line and linebackers have not had a good 2-week stretch. But I do think they're going to be back focusing on going a little 4-3, Caleb Perry in there, playing some heavier boxes. I think they're going to get after Carson Beck.
It's crazy you can say they haven't had their best stuff the last couple weeks, and they gave up 14 points against Mississippi and Mississippi State, I'm sorry, and 18 points against Kentucky, and wild, not a ton of total yards against Mississippi State and all that. Here's where Georgia is with Carson Beck. Kirby Smart was asked on Monday, are you thinking about benching Carson Beck? And it was a legit question, and he answered it like, no, we're not thinking about that. But that's how far it's gotten to the point of this kid struggling. And it feels like the last year, the Stetson Bennett era, it felt like Georgia's quarterbacks just make every single play they need to make. It feels like they don't make any mistakes, any big third down, if they got to run for it, whatever it is. Going back to Stetson Bennett, it just feels like they've made that play in previous games against Tennessee. And I think it was maybe Tuesday night on the ranking show, they were talking about how Ole Miss got to Carson Beck with four rushers. And I think somebody said Tennessee's front seven or defensive line takes a backseat to nobody. I can't remember if that was on the SEC network or where I heard that. But it's true. I mean, the way Tennessee has played in the front seven, the depth they have on the defensive line, the number of guys that they can roll in and roll out of there, the pressures they get consistently, the sack numbers, you would expect a struggling quarterback to continue to struggle against this Tennessee defensive front if Ole Miss was able to have the success against Georgia's offensive line that it did last week. Now it's going to be up to Tennessee to go out and prove that on the road and show that and make it happen. But I think this is, maybe Booker McFarland said it the other day, this is a line of scrimmage game. This is Tennessee's defensive line versus Georgia's offensive line. How well does Tennessee's offensive line play against the Georgia defensive front? I think that that's where the game is going to be won or lost for sure.
And I mean, to Kirby's credit, man, he is loyal to his quarterbacks almost to a fault. I mean, let's go back to, you know, Jake Fromm and Jacob Eason, and then let's go back to Justin Fields. You know, Justin Fields didn't finish his career there, and then, of course, correct me if I'm wrong, I mean, he had JT Daniels, who is the transfer portal's most popular player. Where did he finish his career? Rice? Was it Rice?
I would have to College Football Reference that one, because I
we love our regulars, but like, you had JT Daniels, who was dealing with some injuries a couple years ago, but he was just riding the pine. I believe it was Stetson Bennett, his first year starting, and it's like, dude, like, what are you doing here? So, I mean, Kirby's very loyal to his quarterback, so that doesn't surprise me, but I got to wonder, you know, how far behind is Gunnar Stockton? Right. Because Carson Beck just doesn't have it this year. Let's flip over to Tennessee's offense, Georgia's defense. And again, Georgia solid across the board defensively. Just, I've been saying this all week. They are so solid. They're a very, very good team. But like, they're just not nationally like top 1, 2, 3, 4 in these defensive categories. They're, you know, 3, 4, 5, 6 in the SEC this year, which the SEC is having a strong defensive year. You know, 6th in the league in scoring defense, 18.4 allowed, 306 total offense, that's 5th. You know, passing defense, 195, that's good. Rushing defense, 111, that's good, but that's 6th. They're really good on third downs, not as good as Tennessee, but they're holding opponents to 28%. And here's something that is a stat that does not go in Tennessee's favor. Georgia's defense has been phenomenal in the red zone, phenomenal. Opposing offenses have scored 11 touchdowns on 24 red zone trips. That is 45%. Grant, what does Tennessee's offense struggle with the most this year?
The red zone. The 11-yard line to 20-yard line red zone specifically.
And specifically, but I mean, hell, last week they stalled out twice inside the 10. So, yeah, man. So, I mean, that's something that's not working in Tennessee's favor. So, again, we're talking about creating opportunities defensively or special teams, who we'll hit on here in a moment because, boy, I love that return game last week. You got to take advantage when that's getting to you. But, you know, linebackers rule the day in Kirby Smart's defense, always have. They're going to play a ton of linebackers. They've got versatility there. That's why Georgia loves Christian Gass, Tennessee linebacker commit. You know, he can play on the edge at that Leo, outside in some space, inside. That's kind of how their guys are, you know, going back to all the, you know, ones that are playing for the Philadelphia Eagles now. But they got two really, really good linebackers in C.J. Allen and Small Munden, both of which Tennessee was in on those recruitments. Here's something to show you how far Tennessee's defense has come this year. I can't remember. It might have been on the Monday night chat, actually. So shout out to that poster, whoever you are. Which secondary would you take right now? Like, if you broke it down. And it's interesting, Grant, because tell me where you disagree. I would take Tennessee's corners over Georgia's corners. I would take Georgia's safeties with Malachi Starks, really good player, over Tennessee's safeties. but shout out Willie B. But I would take Tennessee's nickel player, and Boo Carter and Christian. I think Christian Harrison's playing good football right now. We know what Boo Carter's doing right now. So the point that we're splitting hairs here, comparing Tennessee's secondary to that, somebody told me in week two of the season, Tennessee's secondary was lamb chops. You know, right. Tennessee's secondary to Georgia's secondary right now. That's how, I mean, tip of the cap to Tim Banks. That's how far they've come.
And it was a off season of massive overhaul for that secondary. I mean, you couldn't have picked them out of a lineup in April because it was such a new group. And for them to make the progress that they've made, everybody, the front seven, the defensive line gets a lot of attention. I guess I should say the defensive line more than anything, but that secondary, Jermon McCoy, Ricky Gibson, Boo Carter, what you're talking about with those star guys, they have played really, really well, really consistent. I mean, they've made plays when they've had to make plays. They've made, you know, goal line plays too. They've done their work in the red zone as well. So yeah, it's crazy how quickly that secondary got overhauled and suddenly they're playing really, really good football.
And I do want to give a shout out to Jalen McMurray, man. He's made a couple of nice plays the last couple of weeks. We're all talking about Jermon McCoy, who I think's all American worthy, and Ricky Gibson, you know, by the way, both are just sophomores.
So, crazy.
Incredible. But Jalen McMurray coming in has made a couple of plays here lately. So, I think Tennessee's corners have been phenomenal. Return game, you know, where can you make the breaks, take advantage of them, you know, all that type of stuff. For the most part, for the duration of Mike Eckler's tenure here, special teams coordinator, Tennessee's coverage units have been so good. There was a two-week stretch there, Florida, and I guess it was Alabama, but Florida game jumps out at me where the coverage units were not good. They've kind of gotten that back and solidified. I thought Tennessee's special teams performance, seeing Max Gilbert bounce back, was awesome, okay? Jackson Ross is about as consistent as all get out. Peyton Lewis had a nice kick return. William Wright went back and had a nice kick return, but, you know, burying the lead here. Boo Carter. He's going to muff one at some point. It's football, but he is. If you, to be a successful punt returner like you were in high school, Grant, you've got to be fearless, just fearless. You, like that one that Boo went and caught and then just got smacked and you heard that pop all the way up in the press box, like it pops right back up. You got to be fearless. He saved Tennessee 20 yards on one of those ball that kind of skipped over his head, went up and got it and ran out of bounds. The 23-yard punt return right before the half allowed Tennessee, along with Jeff Levy and Tennessee's defense, allowed Tennessee to get on the board there right before the half. He had a really good game. So, again, even if you are shorthanded, even if Nico's playing, creating opportunities defensively and special teams, I think is going to be a huge, huge part of this football game.
Yeah, you got to be fearless. Here's a good story about me as a punt returner in high school. I'm playing freshman football, probably my first freshman football game. They tell me to go back there and field a punt. I go back there, completely muff the punt. I can't remember if we were covered, the other team covered, and I was fired immediately. That was my extensive punt return career as a high school football player.
Not I remember, but I mean, it just goes to show you how difficult that is. Like, I remember.
Oh, yeah. You got to be fearless.
I remember when I was in high school and, like, we went through a couple of games, like, I guess it's my senior year, went through a couple of games where the dude just kept muffing it. They would try somebody else, they'd muff it, or, you know, try just not doing it, you know, heels at 10, all that type of stuff. And finally, they put one of my buddies over there that's a linebacker, but he played like a little tight end. He had like a broken foot and was like hobbling all year long, just trying to stay out there. They put him back there just to catch it, just catch it so that we can have a chance. And, but again, goes back to Boo just being fearless.
Yeah, and he changed the game against Mississippi State. He changed so many, he flipped field position so many times. Like, those are huge yards. And yeah, he's probably going to make a mistake at some point. But you got to be kind of fearless at that position. You're watching that ball come down. You know everybody's coming at you. You're on the run sometimes trying to make those catches. You got to be smart, but you also kind of got to be that fearless a little bit where you're going to try to field something and save some yards. I think in a game like this at Georgia, obviously a mistake would be huge, but if you're flipping the field, if you're getting 20 yards, I mean, that's a really, really big difference to start a drive, especially for a Tennessee offense that's going to have to do a lot of that and moving the football and scoring points. And like y'all were talking about, I think on the Tuesday podcast, like you don't want to be settling for those field goals, but it was good to see Max Gilbert go 4 for 4, whatever it was, against Mississippi State after struggling the way he did for 2 weeks, where you feel a little bit better trotting him out there Saturday night if you have to.
Yeah, he had missed 5 of his last 6. Crazy. And a couple of those, the offense was just so desperate to get on the board. And they sent him out there for like 53, 54 yarders. And like, that's right. Tough, especially for a young guy. But like, he had missed 5 of his last 6 and then drilled 2 in the span of 46 seconds. And that last one, man, I mean, again, if you want to know how much that meant to him and how much he was probably going through it last week, like, he celebrated like they just won the Super Bowl, man. Like, that's
awesome. You just got to see a shot go in sometimes. Just see a shot go in. Get that confidence back.
It's like with those deep balls. Just see one of those connect.
Right.
See one of those connect. We're nearing the end of this podcast. I want to get to bold predictions and score predictions. But if you'll allow me, Grant, quickly, I know we got to go, but let's go back to this is completely off topic, but let's go back to Tuesday night in the college football playoff conversation, okay? You were on that conference call, you know, committee chair essentially says, I'm not, you know, don't quote me direct here, but essentially he said, yeah, well, Tennessee's offense has been pretty inconsistent. I mean, not like it was at the beginning of the year. Tennessee's offense actually got to the 30s this week, so, I mean, okay. And then they said, yeah, we just look at Indiana and BYU, and they had some big wins, and so we just wanted to, you know, put them up there. Again, BYU had to get a defensive holding call to bail them out of beating their rival who was under 500. And Indiana, you know, beat Michigan, but clearly Michigan is not who Michigan is right now. And I think if Indiana loses at Ohio State, it's out. It is out because that strength of schedule did jump up this week from 103 to 100 in the country. It's just the messaging was just not very clear. And then, again, we can attack this from so many different angles. Look at Texas. Right. What has Texas done this year? You know, like, what in the world has Texas done?
They won at vaunted First Bank Stadium on the west end of Nashville, whatever that place is called.
Yeah, I was very confused by the phrasing when specifically asked why did Tennessee get jumped when two teams in front of Tennessee, you know, lost.
It's hard to define, I guess, what a good win is, because it feels like what's holding Tennessee back is North Carolina State ends up being pretty terrible. Oklahoma ends up being pretty terrible. And then you're talking about a 500 Michigan team that, okay, Texas beat them in Ann Arbor. I guess that was a big deal for some reason. Well, they're not a very good football team, Michigan. Indiana, what'd they do in the second half against Michigan? They couldn't move the ball. They were a two-touchdown favorite. They won 20-15. So I don't really understand why that's a big win. What qualifies as a big win for certain teams and other teams it's not? Like, ESPN, all the stuff they've written is North Carolina State and Oklahoma are holding Tennessee back because they're 500 football teams. Well, Indiana's beaten 500 football teams so far. BYU's beaten a 500 football team and had to get bailed out by that holding call where the AD comes in and just absolutely rips the entire league and gets fined $40,000. Like, that's how crazy it was. Like, I don't know. What's a good win? I feel
like Michigan sucks this year, so like, right, that's not
exactly
a good win.
I mean, Michigan and Oklahoma, what's the difference in those two programs right now, those two teams? North Carolina State and Michigan, it's two 500 football teams.
You know the difference, Grant? One won a national championship last year.
That's true. And I guess that kind of recency bias, that brand name stuff, I don't know, matters. But honestly, give me college basketball quad one wins, quad two wins, quad three. Let's find some way to figure out how to quantify these wins and what's a good win and what's a bad win, what's a good loss, what's a bad loss.
So are you in favor of pocket protectors and glasses right now or committees?
Listen, everybody hated the BCS.
I know.
The BCS has looked better with age every single year, it feels like.
I think somebody wrote this on the board too. Like, I think it made more sense with 4-team, but like with 12-team, I mean, there's so many teams out there. Like, maybe they should treat it like football coaches do analytics. Like, take that into consideration.
And in the selection committee's defense, dare I say that, there's never going to be a cut and dry, yeah, these are the 12 teams. There's going to be arguments every single week, every single year. If you go to 14 teams, if you go to 16 teams, the argument's going to go from the 12th and 13th team to the 14th and 15th team to the 15th and 16th, 16th and 17th, whatever. Like, it's not going to be easy to figure this stuff out because you don't have a NFL system where, you know, your division winners get in and your wild card get in, and it's just based on who you beat, what your record is, all that stuff, and tiebreakers. It's going to be a judgment call on so many of these teams that get these last at-large bids, and it's that way with college basketball every March when one team got snubbed and one team got way overseeded or underseeded. I mean, it's going to happen every single year this time of year.
So you can only control what you can control. That's Tennessee playing in Georgia. Go win, you're good. If you lose this game, that is a, as long as you don't get blown out, right, that is a quality loss to a good team. You know, it's last time I checked, Alabama's not getting penalized for losing to Tennessee because they think Tennessee's a good team. What I think is going to be interesting too, Vanderbilt has an opportunity to finish the season 6-6. So you look back at that, it's like you lost to a 6-6 Vanderbilt team. It's like, I mean, come on, what's going on there? Ole Miss is not getting crushed for losing to a horrible Kentucky team that we mentioned earlier. So I don't know. We can talk about this all day long. I'm sorry. It was on my mind. I wanted to bring it back up. Let's finish off this podcast back to what's actually relevant right now, Tennessee and Georgia. Grant, if you will, give me a little synopsis on how you think this game's going to go and give me a score prediction and a bowl prediction if you got one.
I hate to be Bryn Hubbs here and say I got to see it to believe it, but I think I got to see it to believe it. I think Tennessee's a really good football team. I don't think Georgia's quite as bad as they've looked at times at Kentucky, at Ole Miss. What was the other loss? Jog my memory here. At Alabama early on in that football game.
Well, almost came back and won that game after giving up 30 in the first half.
Yeah. Right. Going on the road, obviously, for Tennessee is going to be huge Saturday night. At Georgia, it's, you know, as tough as it gets in this league, it's one of the better environments in this league. So I think Tennessee covers. I don't think Tennessee wins. I don't know what the score would be, 24-14, something like that. I think that might be some PTSD from 2022 creeping in, but I think I just got to see it to believe. I think Tennessee's, and I don't think Tennessee's out of this thing. I don't think they're dead on arrival if they walk out of Athens with a loss. I think their playoff chances could still be there. You would just have to have a lot of different outcomes kind of thread the needle to make that happen, which it could happen. I don't know. We'll see how it's going to be a lot of chaos. I think 3 weeks from now, we're going to look back at this and say, we didn't really know what we were looking at because of, you know, X team lost to X team and this team got upset and whatever. It could be completely topsy-turvy turned upside down 3 weeks from now. So we'll see.
But make sure to keep your receipts, though, so we can tweet them out and talk about how the committee is just talking out of both sides of the mouth, because that's fun, in my opinion.
That's true.
I pray that somebody on our staff picks Tennessee to win, because I'm afraid it's going to be a sweep in the wrong direction, and that's never fun. This will be the first game this year I picked against Tennessee, and yeah, I mean, sure, injury situations, especially the time of this recording, as you guys know, this is not, you know, we're not recording this on a Friday night or Saturday morning. We're doing it earlier in the week, so the time of this recording, very much in question, not just Nico, but, you know, where's Dante Thornton? Andre Carrick, he was on the sideline. He didn't have his helmet, but he was on the sideline for the entire game, but he didn't play in the second half. Spraggins was in and out. Deshaun Bishop, who we haven't mentioned in this game, I think he needs to play, and I think it's going to be very questionable leading up to kickoff, because it's not like he's got loads of experience, but I would rather have Deshaun Bishop back there in pass pro than Peyton Lewis in between the hedges, you know? So, you know, for the injury concerns, for Tennessee's road woes, with Georgia having its back up against the wall, there's just a lot of factors that is just telling me to pick Georgia in this game, and so I'm going to. But I'll remain steadfast. I think Tennessee can win this game. I feel like you need Nico to win this game. I'll say that. But I do think it's going to be a close game regardless of who's playing quarterback, because Tennessee's defense is here, and Dylan Sampson is him. Like, I just
– right.
I think this is going to be a good, fun, old-fashioned – Let's get muddy, let's get dirty top football game. Tennessee and Georgia of the early 2000s and in the 90s. I'm expecting that. So give me Georgia to win 24-17 right now. Will I be shocked if Tennessee wins? No, I won't. I absolutely won't be, because I think the game is bigger than one player. But having said that, I do think you need Nico to win. So
it felt like a much steeper hill to climb in 2022, even though Tennessee was undefeated at that point and had put up.
And that team, that Georgia team, was so good.
Right, and Tennessee had put up crazy numbers. It feels like Tennessee's closed the gap a little bit, and Georgia's kind of closed the gap too by kind of looking a little bit more human than they have during this insane run that they've been on the last 4 years, whatever it's been. So, yeah, I could see Tennessee winning the football game because of that defense and because of that run game. It's just something that you kind of have to see it happen to actually think it's going to happen, predict it's going to happen, whatever. Like,
say it. Say the phrase.
I got to see it to believe it. Shut up, Brent.
There you go. Brent said that before we did the Rocky Top roundtable earlier about Florida or something, like 2030 Florida game.
Let him forget it.
I'm like, well, Brent, like they've got. He was kidding, but I was like, well, they've won twice in the last 3 years, so you've seen it now. You gotta believe it. I believe that Premier Garage in Knoxville is one of the best places to buy garage floor, cabinetry, all that and more. It's actually East Tennessee's number one for storage solutions. That is PremierGarageOfKnoxville.com. Again, garage flooring, cabinetry, storage solutions. Be the best Tennessee fan this football season and basketball season that you can possibly be by ordering the Smoky Gray Hybrid Polymer Floor today. Again, that's the Smoky Gray Hybrid Polymer Floor today at premiergarageknoxville.com/falls. That website, again, it's a landing page. You can schedule an in-home consultation, phone number, everything they offer and more. That is at premiergarageknoxville.com/falls. Grant Ramey, had fun as always, man. I'm excited to go back. Hey, let's rewind 2 years ago. Everything was going great. Tennessee was undefeated. Everything was great. Grant Ramey joins the staff.
And it's been all disaster since then.
And Tennessee loses at Georgia. I don't want us to just, I mean, that's why he doesn't have an underscore.
Actually, let's go full circle. I'll quit my job Saturday morning.
No.
We'll see if that helps.
If you quit your job, that means all of us have to work so much harder to, to overcompensate.
Tennessee fans would sacrifice me in a minute for a win. A billion times over.
I stand with you like I stand with Brent Hubbs. I stand with you, Grant. It's going to be a fun one. Tennessee and Georgia, 7:30 Eastern time on ABC. Of course, we're going to be here before the game, during the game, after the game, recapping, talking, analyzing. Let's get weird. Let's get a little nutty, guys. Tennessee and Georgia, all that and more of that coverage is at FallQuest.com. Hey, if you're listening right now, go ahead and take advantage. $1 for 7 days and 50% off your first year. $1, 7 days. 50% off your first year at FallQuest.com. If you're listening but not a member of our site, you missed all the notes on Nico Iamaleava throughout the week from Brent Hubbs and Austin Price. Don't miss out. Moving forward, join us at FallQuest.com. This has been GameQuest presented by our friends at Smokey at premiergarageknoxville.com/falls. Thank you so much, guys, and we'll see you between the heads.